I wasn't going to talk about this, but just remind me, years ago I was listening to a radio station with Super Jock, Larry Lujack. And it was a new station that they formed to do oldies, and they were, he and his sidekick, little Tommy, said, if this doesn't work out, we could always do a gig with the Chippendale dancers. So I sent them an email, and I just said, I've switched the message on the answering machine when people are on hold to your station. If I get fired for doing this, can I join you in going to the Chippendale dancers? He read the email on the air, and he says, well, Mike, I don't know. Do you have the buns? Well, it's really kind of interesting. My real opening was about this atheist who was just so incredibly self-confident. And then one day somebody came up to him and said, I can't get over how much you look like Jesus. And from that point forward, he just couldn't believe in himself. Well, all of this fanfare, which is much more than usual, is because our topic today is conceited or convinced. And we're going to be talking about unity's second principle, which is really kind of weird as I was preparing to talk, because for me it was the easiest of all of the five principles to talk about. And in another way, it was also the most difficult of our principles to talk about. And what that principle states very simply is our own very essence is of God, and therefore we are inherently good. And to me, this principle is probably the one that stands out as the most significant of our four principles. Because if we get that, then all of the other four principles become not just easier, but they become almost automatic. And if we don't get this second principle, all of those other four principles become really, really problematic. But again, our title today is Conceited or Convinced, so I want to talk a little bit about conceit. And I remember back when I was a teenager, and all of us were really kind of strutting our stuff. We all thought we were so cool. And I definitely came from a crowd of greasers in the old neighborhood. But there was one individual that really, really stood out. He really thought that he was the be-all and end-all of everything. You know, if you remember the TV series Happy Days, you know, the Fonz would have typified the person I'm talking about. You know, he was always slicking his hair back and combing it and in the mirror and all this kind of stuff. And one of the girls at one point just said to him, I can't believe you. You are so incredibly conceited. To which he responded, hey, I'm not conceited. I'm convinced. And so we began to talk about him that, you know, there was no conceit in his family because he had it all. So we're going to talk about conceit in a little bit, but I want to return back to our basic principle. Our own essence is of God, and therefore we are inherently good. And actually, this is a principle that has been around for centuries, long before there ever was a unity. And there is a doctrine called Imago Dei, which is Latin for in the image of God. And so it's a principle that is ascribed to by Judaic traditions, Christian traditions, Hindu traditions, and also Islam. But you don't hear a lot about it. And there's a reason for it. Like some of us in unity, when we talk about it and we espouse it and we rattle it off and mouth it as our second principle, like all of those religious traditions that I talked about, We don't believe it either. I mean, you need to think about this for just a minute. Our own essence is of God, and therefore we are inherently good. And if you just go beyond the words and you really try to internalize it, what exactly does that mean, and how profoundly does that play out for each and every one of you in your own lives? And what kind of a difference does it make in our cities, in our country, and in the world if we really believed that second principle and saw it not just in ourselves, but we were able to not just say it, but really think and feel, namaste. I behold the divine in you. And absolutely everybody that we come into contact with day after day after day. There's a lot of good reasons not to believe it. You know, one we already touched on, conceit. And we all have, most of us have anyway, this thing about ourselves. You know, this sense of pride in our own little world and our kingdom. And so we don't have time to allow that to be interrupted, because part of what's on the path of really truly appreciating and feeling that second principle is something called humility and something called vulnerability, daring to put ourselves out there, and so that it's really tough. Another reason not to really dig in and believe our second principle is that the world absolutely says, what are you, crazy? This isn't what you are about. This is not what you're supposed to believe. You're supposed to believe what we tell you to believe so that we can continue to control you. We want to dictate to you what you should be doing day after day, how much money you should be spending, what kinds of things that you are buying, and it's okay to be rude. It's okay to be apathetic. It's okay to be disdainful. And on personal levels, even in our closest relationships, people who mean so well because they really love us, early on, inadvertently, accidentally send us messages, you're not enough. Don't do this. Don't take a chance. Be careful. What you're considering you're doing is risky. And then there's another reason. I think deep down inside, we inherently know that if we were really believers of this second principle, it's going to mean an incredible amount of work for each and every one of us to grow that, to develop that, and then to play it out in some way, shape, and form in our lives. I had a classmate in school. He became my best friend in seminary. And he really refused to subscribe to the principle because he did not think anybody was worthy of that state of being. And he graduated and he was ordained and he wouldn't do this. And everything that's coming out of my mouth today, and I as a minister should know better. Just this past Thursday, a friend of mine really let me down and hurt me. And I absolutely refused to let it go. I had to let him know, for no other reason, to try to calm what was going on inside of me, that he had really hurt me very badly. And I just, if I really was subscribing to the second principle, it would have been so easy to shed off, because He only hurt me because I allowed him to hurt me. He only hurt me because I got caught up in everything that Mike Corbin thinks that he is. And I only let him hurt me because I forgot what I really and truly am at my essence, at least at that time. And it's just something that's not easy. Because again, if we have to be about our Father's business, we have to devote ourselves to a routine and regular prayer practice in order to align ourselves with the God that's within us. And we don't have time for that. And so what happens as a consequence is we dehumanize ourselves. We subject ourselves to all of the garbage that is going on. We watch news stories. Anybody watch the news stories the past year and just go like that? You can't take it anymore? But again, one of the things that Christ within us generates is the creative divine ability to overcome, to withstand, to hold firm in that knowing that who and what we are. And it's really kind of awkward because it's our second principle, in my opinion, more than any of the other five principles that draw people into unity. Because they're tired of hearing the message of you're lacking and you're not good enough. And so in unity, oh my God, I'm perfect exactly the way I am. And yes, I may have things to work on. And so it's really kind of ironic if we come and we mouth it, but we don't work on it. There's a scriptural basis for what I'm talking about here. You know, it starts in the very first chapter of Genesis. He made them in his own image. In his own image, he created them. Man and woman, he created them. So it starts very early. That's a script that goes back 3,000 years when it was first written. And then if we move into the Christian scriptures, at the very beginning of John's gospel, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. That's why Christmas is such an incredible holiday. You know, it talks about whatever is involved in being human. Something wonderful happened. But what we have such a difficult time transitioning to is that we can identify it in somebody else. We could identify it in Jesus. We could identify it maybe in other prophets, you know, Muhammad or Siddhartha and Buddha or whatever. But to embrace that for ourselves, it's tough. I understand that. So if nothing else today, I just want to say to you, each and every one of you is absolutely the miracle of Christmas. When you became flesh, God took on skin. And again, I ask you just to dwell there for a bit. If you really had this consciousness all of the time, what a difference it would make in your life. Because what we are talking about here is coming to that realization of who and what you are, you know, is really a transformation in awareness. It's a transformation of consciousness. And this isn't a case of overcoming your humanity. This is a case of elevating your humanity. You know, so often we talk about, I'm only human. You know, we say that we're spiritual beings having a human experience. But even that delineates a boundary between the two realities. And what the second principle is really saying, it's all about eating away, eroding, eliminating, gradually doing away with whatever the wall is, whatever the line is, whatever the boundary is, whatever has been drummed into you as a child might have been, to the point that they are indistinguishable from one another. Back when I was working in the business world, there was this lady that worked in this office, and she actually was my sister-in-law, and we liked to give her a hard time. We made fun of her all the time, but we were really close, and it was nothing harmful. And she had a comeback. She said, "Oh, you guys think you're so adorable. You must have carnival mirrors at home." So what I'm going to suggest to you today is that you all have carnival mirrors in your home. Because when you're doing whatever, combing your hair, shaving, putting on your makeup, whatever the case may be, and you look in the mirror, you're not seeing the true picture. You're seeing something that's distorted. Because if that mirror really were transmitting who and what you are and at your essence, you would be able to see that Christ reality in a very, very real way. There's a very old Hindu legend that I will share with you. And the legend holds that there was a time that everybody on earth, all human beings, actually were gods. But they were not behaving the way God should behave. So Brahma, the main god, removed their divinity from them. And then he called a council and gathered all of the gods together and said, and told them what was happening and what he did. And he said, "I called you together to talk about this. We need a place to hide this divinity." And one of the gods said, "Let's bury it deep within the earth." And Brahma said, "No, we can't do that because eventually they'll dig it up. They'll find it." And so another god said, "Let's put it way down at the bottom of the oceans." And Brahma said, "No, at some point they're going to find it down there too." And another god said, "Let's place it on top of the highest mountain." And Brahma said, "Someday they will climb that mountain." And so the god said, "Then we just don't know where to put it. We've talked about everything on earth. There's just no place to hide it." So Brahma thought about it for a long time. And then he said, "I know what we will do. We're going to put it deep inside them because they'll never think to look for it there." We don't think to look for it. And one of the things that was that's significant about the dude, Jesus, is he discovered it there. It was deep inside that he grew into such an awareness and such a state of consciousness that he actually came to realize and appreciate and cherish just how incredibly precious he was and began to use the term Father in reference to the God that not only was a part of everything and everything, but was the be-all in everything that he was. And he understood it so greatly that he actually issued a pronouncement. "You see me doing all of these wonderful things, and I'm telling you now, all that I do, you will do and more." That is why we dare to adopt this second principle. And so you might be saying, "Well, okay, but if everything you're saying, we can't just snap our fingers or turn a switch on and whoosh, instant Christ." It takes work. It takes appreciation. When I was at Unity of Oak Park, we had somebody that was really burdensome. He was kind of like crashing into the church uncontrollably, roaming from room to room and taking things and all this. And the board was trying to decide, how do we deal with this? What do we do? And one of the board members, who is Ryan Priester, you may remember him. He came and spoke a few months ago. He said, I think we need to remember something. This guy is still the Christ. So if we want to know what we're going to do, let's just stop now and pray for him. And the board did that. And he led the prayer. And it really just drove home the point that Christ's essence and unworthiness are just so radically incompatible. And going back to the scriptures, one of the scripture stories is about the apostles who are gathered together, and they were growing and becoming more and more conceited, more full of themselves, and they got into a discussion about which one of them was the greatest. And Jesus comes along and he basically says, it's all about service. Whoever is of the greatest service is the one that is greatest. And he demonstrated that at some point by getting down on his hands and knees and washing their feet, precisely to make the point that coming to that realization of your Christ essence doesn't mean ascending to becoming royalty, a priest, a king, or a queen. It doesn't involve running around telling everybody how absolutely incredible you are. It just simply involves being there for one another. It basically involves laying yourself out for one another. And it's the really significant point is that when you do that, because all of us are saying, you know, we've heard, you know, I got to think of myself first. You know, I got to make this decision. I have to do what's best for me. And what's best for you is what the gospel story tells us, is that growing in awareness and acting in a way that is consistent with what is best for others. Every week we bless our children. We love you. We bless you. We appreciate you. We behold the Christ within you. How often do we say it to one another? Not just the words. How often do we look into one another's eyes? How often do we say it without saying a word? We're going to take this to prayer and meditation. I was going to open the talk by asking how many human beings are here, ask you to raise your hand, and then I was going to say, and how many angels are here, and see if anybody raised their hands. And then I was going to say, is anybody here the Christ? Just out of curiosity to see how many of you would raise your hand. And I decided not to do that. But I do think I would like to symbolically do something else today. And we could just say, use the aisle as a measure. And I really invite you to stand at this point, look across the aisle, and confer the blessing that we give upon our children all the time. And let's give this to one another. We love you. We bless you. We appreciate you. And we behold the Christ in you and know that you are empowered to do great things. Namaste.